Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It is Naturally Green at SaveYourLife.com. And I hope your gardens have survived the cold. It looks like another cold night coming up Monday night, maybe a low of 30 degrees in Rochester, which, of course, could be less than that. We had a couple nights around 25, 27 degrees this past week. And the dilemma I ran into with the snow was that if I put something to cover my vegetable garden, which had some seedlings coming up in it, but they're cool season seedlings, peas and kale and lettuce, things like that. But so I thought they would be okay, but I was willing to hedge my bets and cover them with something. But if I put out something, the snow, heavy wet snow was just going to crush them. I mean, that would have just done most of them in because the stems aren't that strong. And I was worried about the snow crushing them just, even without my covering them. But it certainly would have crushed them if I'd covered them. Uncovered, the snow kind of worked its way around them and didn't seem to damage any of them. And then kind of ended up insulating the seedlings a little bit from the colder temperatures. There's actually fond memories when I was out in California in January quite a few years ago in Napa, and they had a freeze, actually. It was colder than a frost. And it was a fairly early morning, and I drove by Opus One, and they had turned their irrigation on overnight, and so the vines were all covered in ice. And with the sun coming up, it was pretty spectacular looking. It's just the sun reflecting through all the ice-covered vines. And so so that's often done in Florida, too, I think. They'll turn the water, the irrigation on, and try to protect the blossoms, the fruit, from the more extreme cold. So then the snow gave my seedlings some insulation. I think they were all fine. These are seedlings that I just sown outside, so that I didn't transplant them. Transplants would have really struggled with that kind of cold. So I hope you didn't lose anything. Again, it's not going to be as cold this week, but one night, and it certainly could happen over the next few weeks. So we're not past the frost-free date of May 15th yet. So we've got a lot of time when a potential frost could still show up. So be careful about what you're planting. Protect some things if you can. And sometimes it's too windy, and the wind just blow any cover off of your plants. But generally, if it's going to be really cold, that's because there's no wind and the cold really just settles in. And so wind is usually not a problem with these frosts, but the snow was. I was about to cover things and then realized I would have just crushed them all. I have some peas that are like 3 inches high. They're growing really nicely, and I actually waited to put a trellis over the, for them to climb on, because I thought I would cover the garden, and then ended up not covering it. So now I can get a little put a little string trellis up so they can climb. And I'm looking forward to early season peas. The spinach are showing their first true leaves, as are the kale. I saw a note that some of the farms, Sunscape Farms, is now open, both the Greece and Penfield locations. They have opened early. They generally open May 1st, and saw a post on Facebook that they are now open, and that the one in Greece is the former Deconics Farm Market location. And I've got fond memories of Marty and John and their whole crew at Deconics Farm Market, one of the really top quality operations for for decades in our area, and Sunscape Farms purchased their property and their farm on Maiden Lane, and it's the Red Barn. There's a couple farm markets there, but they're the one in the Red Barn, and Sunscape does really nice quality. I gotta think that Marty and John are you know, happy to have a high quality farmer and grower in the space that they had for so many years. So Sunscape Farms is open. The nurseries are starting to get more plants in and putting them out. I saw a full in bloom delphinium at a nursery this past week, which you really can't put outside. It is not going to be happy at 30 degrees this week. And unfortunately, when you buy things that are in full bloom, they are not going to bloom as long for you once you put them in your garden. So when you're looking for plants to buy, look for ones that have maybe a lot of buds on them, but are not in bloom yet. Look for plants that are more compact. Often people pick the plant that has the most flowers on it right now, and that's not going to transplant as well. And those flowers aren't going to last as long. But, I mean, it'll look great the first day you put it in, and then depending on the amount of sun and wind and warm temperatures or cold temperatures, it may not look as good, over the next week or two. And if it's, it'll probably recover and regrow. But, again, look for things that are compact with buds, not flowers, and they're just going to bloom longer for you in your garden. And if you get out and visit some of the garden centers in our area, please take a few photos of individual plants or their gardens or, whatever strikes you as interesting and email them to me. I generally, over the course of the spring, I get to most of the garden centers in the region at least once and often several times. So, that's over the next 2 months, basically. So, take some photos and let me know what you see, what the looks especially interesting. It's michael@saverlife.com. I was just out walking this past week along the Riverway Trail. Bloodroot was coming into bloom. Got some of that in my garden also, and there are a few different wildflowers. There's also some Lily of the Valley, which is, I don't know how it got there. Maybe a home that was in that area a long time ago. Maybe someone put it there, planted it there, but there's quite a big area of Lily of the Valley along the Riverway Trail, and this is just under the 390 overpass, so the west side of the river. It's where I've been walking fairly often looking for the beaver. There's a beaver lodge right along the river at that point, just past the 390 overpass, 100 yards maybe or something, remarkably close to the overpass. And I still can't get over how many trees the beaver's been working on over the last couple of years, it appears. I mean, like 100 trees, maybe more. And these are some pretty big trees on both sides of the river. So I was telling someone recently, you might take it as a joke that this beaver wants to dam the Genesee River, but 100 big trees, that would create a significant dam. It's not gonna hold. I don't think a family of beaver can dam the Genesee River, but 100 trees would get them partway there and certainly make a mess of the river. It'll be interesting to see what happens with these urban beaver. They look like they've been chewing on some trees recently. So they're still working. And lots of birds making nests these days. I've seen posts of robins' nests, and I actually saw some robins carrying some dead perennials, I think, sort of like grasses or something like that, to build a nest nearby. And some blue jays were doing the same thing. It's just it's a fun season to get out and explore and kind of watch what's happening with Mother Nature. And you know, the weeds are growing pretty well. And if you have some plants you can't identify, email me, michael@saverlife.com. Send me some photos of those plants. Maybe I can help you identify them. Maybe there's something you want to keep and move. I remember I was doing some lawn care a long time ago for someone who loved wildflowers, and one of the things I would do is come with this slit seeding machine, which would help work some grass seed into the surface of the soil, but it also would damage potential wildflowers and things. So before I would come, she would dig out some of the seedling wildflowers that were in her lawn and move them into the, you know, the woods or the garden beds. So I'm often saving things that most people would pull out as weeds. You know, just yesterday, looking at this garden path, and most of the things needed to come out, partly because they were going to seed themselves all over the place. But there was also a little baby lady's mantle and a little forget-me-not and some moss and little baby penstemon. So they were big enough that it was pretty obvious what they were because the parent plant was nearby where they'd seeded from, and you don't necessarily need lots more of these, but you know, maybe they're good to trade with friends or you know, neighbors, or move to a new area and expand some gardens. And they you know, the better you get at identifying the seedlings earlier, when they're younger, the easier they are to take out, just be a little less work. I still end up with plants that I'm not sure what they are, and I let them grow out and realize that I did want them or didn't want them, and then take them out or move them. So, I still run into plants that I can't quite figure out what they are. So Highland Park, still a stunning time to go. The magnolias, many of the early ones, the star magnolias, are finished. The tulip magnolias, some of those are nearly gone, but there's still lots of things in bloom in spite of the wind and the cold we had this past week. Certainly the wind rips a lot of the cherry blossoms off, but still, I think, one of the most beautiful times in Highland Park. There are quite a few lilacs blooming. The frost, I haven't gone over to see the ones in Highland Park, but the freezes, really, that we had this past week didn't damage my lilacs, which are virtually open. And again, it's just, you know, late April. Not even, you know, we still have quite a few days until May, and yet there are lots of lilacs open. So enjoy them and get out and see the parks. Lots of beautiful things in bloom, whether it's shad trees or serviceberry, the black cherries. Again, the wildflowers really starting to bloom now. And it's one of my favorite times of the year, seeing so many things come into bloom. The other thing, though, as these plants start to regrow for the new season, is that right now is an ideal time to find maple tree seedlings that will be hidden soon by perennials that grow up around them. And when that happens, they get another season of growth, and then you may not be able to pull them out by hand. You may have to get a trowel, and that can be difficult if they're perennials and things. So right now, these little maple seedlings that are, you know, maybe this year's, maybe last year's, maybe a couple years ago, I invariably find them, and they're fairly easy to spot because the leaves have a light green color that's different than the perennials around them. And so if you can't pull them up by hand, what works really well is a pair of pliers, and you use the pliers right down at the stem near the ground. And these are 4 or 5 inch seedlings. I'm not saying pliers are going to work on a, 3 foot sapling. That you'll need a shovel for. But right now the soil's fairly moist. It's going to dry out at some point this spring, and it's going to be harder to pull things out of the ground. And so a couple of reasons to go after the maple seedlings now: A, because you can see them and find them, B, because they will be hidden later, and B, because the ground is fairly loose and they're easier to pull out. So, and just a pair of pliers, and I think you'd be amazed at how easy it is to pull these out. And especially if you get a pair of pliers, I'm not sure the term for the sort of, they have a wider grabbing surface. I don't mean the vice grips, although something like that would just probably just crush the stem, and it would break rather than allow you to pull the roots out. So I have to figure out what the term is for those kinds of pliers. But a lot of pliers are sort of narrow gripping surface. These have a wider ridged gripping surface, and often a little area where you can cut wire. Maybe they're mainly wire cutters, but you get the idea. Those work really well. And you'll be amazed at how easy it is to pull out those maple seedlings that you struggle with your bare hands or with gloves on. So spend a few minutes tackling those maple seedlings now, and you'll save yourself a lot of work later on. And of course, the new ones that are just coming up are super easy to pull out now. And I've said before, because we have several of these Norway maples around our neighborhood, well, not more than a set, we got lots of them around the neighborhood, end up with these maple seedlings all over the place. And quite a few years ago, when our kids were young, we paid them a penny per seedling of these maple seedlings, and they found 1,500 of them in our yard, which is hard to believe. But we don't have any grass to mow, so it's all gardens. And still, it's a city property, though. It's not that big. And they had them in groups of 50 on the driveway. There were 1,500. And I gladly paid them the $15. That was the best bargain I've had in gardening assistance. And they never did it again. So, it didn't, in the long run, didn't feel like a great bargain to them. But they had fun counting them, and again, 1,500 from it's mainly our front yard. Growing in amidst the myrtle and the European ginger and all the other plants that we have. So if I go out there today, I can probably pull out easily a few hundred. And it varies year to year. Some years there are more than others. So that was a bumper crop year. I can't believe there were 1,500. And I don't think they went in the backyard. I think this was just the front yard, maybe the sides along the driveway. But that is a lot of maple seedlings. I pulled out about 15 yesterday and ran into a few that I needed the pliers for. So get those maple seedlings out now while you can. And a good time of year to divide hosta also. I got to do some of that myself this weekend because they don't have the leaves open yet, but you can see where the, you know, the size of the plant. And you don't want to divide them into just individual, you know, so that there's just one kind of one leaf coming up, one whorl of leaves. You want to have several of those per plant. And so often when I'm dividing hosta, sometimes you can divide it in the ground and just leave it where it is, cut, you know, in half and maybe into quarters, and then remove one half or three quarters of it and leave the other quarter or the other half in the ground. But in some cases, you want to recenter it anyway. And I've got some growing next to my pond, and I've got the pond liner, so I got to be careful of that. So I'll take the hosta completely out of the ground, which is can be hard to do. They are well-rooted, very dense, almost like a one big rutabaga, and take it out and then divide it with a knife, or I usually use my shovel, which is fairly sharp, and I'll really stomp on it to cut through the hosta. And so I'll probably divide it again this weekend and replant it. And you when it grows out of the ground, you won't even know that you've divided it. It'll probably, you know, it's they get bigger every year. It's gonna look probably, you know, if you divide it in half, it's gonna come up and look pretty much the same size as you had last year, believe it or not. And even a quarter is going to be a fairly decent-sized plant. So hostas are great for taking up space. I've got all kinds of space in the shade that I need to have filled, and these hostas are going to, some of them have big leaves. They're going to be fantastic back there. So now's ideal time to move those things around. If you have comments, questions, you can email me, michael@saverlife.com. And again, send me photos of what you see in bloom, what you have trouble identifying. Love to see those. I was sitting out in my backyard just a couple days ago when the sun was out, it was fairly warm out, and I heard this buzzing, and then I realized I'd forgotten there was a mason bee house that I'd gotten at the birdhouse store, and I put that up and a couple years ago. And so the mason bees were back to their build, sort of quote unquote a nest. They use these tubes of, you know, something like bamboo, and they put their eggs in those and then cover them up with cement, in a sense. That's why they're called mason bees. And cover the end of the tube so you can tell which you know, which tubes have larvae in them, eggs, and, you know, they'll develop into larvae. And I think they put food in there for the larvae before they seal it up. And it's really a pretty extraordinary thing. So, you know, they weren't going to sting me. They weren't interested in me at all. They were just buzzing around this little mason bee house. So it's great to have some additional pollinators. It's fun to watch them, and you could build your own mason bee house, but the birdhouse has a few different sizes if you want to try them. And again, you're not going to get any honey from them. They're not a honeybee, but it does sort of open your eyes to all the other kinds of bees that are out there helping to pollinate. And the mason bee is a native bee. So helps us appreciate them to be able to see them up close. So you can find those over at the birdhouse. This morning they're doing a talk on hummingbirds and Baltimore Orioles, I think, which is maybe finished now, but you can find it on their Facebook page to watch after the fact. But those are some of the birds migrating through. Also, I saw a story maybe in the New York Times just a day or two ago, that right now is a huge migration period for birds, and they're they're really trying to get people to turn off lights, you know, especially downtown buildings, and they've been advocating turning off the lights of the twin beams where the twin towers were in New York City for these couple of key nights of bird migrations. Millions of birds migrating right now. It's for whatever reason, it probably varies some year to year, but they track these migrations. They can use radar to track them. And so light pollution is a serious factor in birds killed in collisions, also throwing off migrations because of the light. You can play a role in this if you have work for a company or have lots of lights on your own property. Maybe consider turning those off for a few nights here, and the next couple of nights are some of the key nights. Really, a kind of a fascinating article about bird migrations, and I think it was 100 to 200 million birds each of these next couple of nights. It was really, or the past couple of nights as well, I think. Fun to read. So if you want details on anything you hear me mention, send me an email, michael@saverlife.com. Get out and enjoy this beautiful sunny weather. And I'll be back with the food show, Discover the Finger Lakes, and tomorrow the wine show here at saverlife.com. Have a great day.